FBS, original Forces programs.
Women of the Waves.
They proved it was possible for women to do the most extraordinary things.
They mucked in, they tried to do the jobs as well, if not better, than the lads, and in no time at all had that huge respect.
The women who join the Navy today aren't all that much different. They're seeking the same sort of experience, but they've got the added bonus, in my view, of actually going to sea.
Those who have enlisted in the Women's Royal Naval Service, known affectionately as the Wrens or Jennies, over the past 100 years, share a common thread with women in today's Royal Navy, and that is spirit. From the first Wren officers in 1917, the first death on active duty in 1918, to the late 1980s when it was debated as to whether women could or should be allowed to go to sea, Wrens have always been ready to do their duty. Something I experienced firsthand, as I am a veteran of the Women's Royal Naval Service, an ex-Wren, a former Jenny. Joining up in 1981 as a Wren Radio Operator, or WRO, I served for 9 years both in the UK and abroad, and I'm honoured and grateful to be bonded to generations of women who put in motion 100 years ago events that today see a fully integrated Royal Navy. I'm privileged to understand the uniqueness of a Wren's life, the training and the camaraderie, which provided a truly amazing experience and an ethos which continues to influence me today. To celebrate and share the humble and challenging beginnings of the Wrens, the National Museum of the Royal Navy in Portsmouth has developed an exhibition on women in the Royal Navy called Pioneers to Professionals. Victoria Ingalls is the Senior Heritage Project Officer.
1917, it's the height of the First World War, and by this point, war has been having quite bad attrition on the fleet, and they are desperately short of manpower. And so they suddenly have to think of a plan B. How are they going to get more people to help? And that's when they then finally turn to women and start using women power to supplement the fleet as well. Initially, it's very much just shore-based roles, and the idea being that they free the men to serve in the fleet. The women are just signing up for hostilities only. The service is formed in November 1917, and it's probably about January, really, before the first ratings start to get recruited. A few of the Wren's officers have been put in place just before then, and it then starts to gather momentum really in early 1918.
Despite not having a vote at this stage, many women were happy to do their bit for the war effort. And during the course of the First World War, Wrens served throughout the United Kingdom, Ireland, as well as Malta, Gibraltar and Genoa, though it came as a surprise to some.
We know in total about 5,500 women served in the Wrens in the First World War. It's quite a minority, but, you know, it's amazing how rapidly they did grow. They took on a lot of people who were already working within civilian roles within the dockyards. One day they're a civilian, the next day they turn up and they're now signed up as a Wren and have a uniform. There was a certain amount of persuasion that went on. Some people were more reluctant than others, and sometimes it was the boyfriends that were reluctant to have their girlfriends sign up and join the service as well. So most recruitment was done through the employment exchanges and you had to apply to them. So for some women, this was something really unusual to do. It was quite an intimidating experience for some women who'd never worked before. Some had. There were many sectors where women were already working and were keen to sort of make their impact on the war effort. Some were munitions workers and things like that. And as soon as the opportunity to serve in the Navy came along, they leapt at the chance.
BFBS, original Forces programmes.
Women of the Waves.
Following the end of World War I, the first Director Wrens, Dame Catherine Furze, petitioned the Admiralty to keep a woman's reservist service going. But her arguments fell on deaf ears, and the Wrens were disbanded in 1919. With the approach of the Second World War, Dame Vera Lawton Matthews was appointed as the new Director Wrens, and so a small yet solid contingency of Wren officers and ratings was established. At the outset of war, there were 3,000 Wrens in admin and support roles, serving Royal Naval establishments, Royal Naval air stations throughout the UK and eventually overseas. In 1941, the National Service Act was introduced for unmarried women aged between 20 and 30, later extended to married women. And the ranks of the Wrens peaked in 1944 with over 70,000 women serving. Recruitment posters, however, were specific in their message. Join the Wrens, free a man for the fleet. No sea time here. During World War II, a total of 100,000 women served, and around 303 died, including the first contingency of Wrens heading en route to Gibraltar on the SS Aguila with the Oscar Gulf 71 convoy in 1941. These volunteers included cipher officers, radio operators, and nurses. By the end of the Second World War, attitudes had changed, and all three services wanted to keep a peacetime service for women, so the Women's Royal Naval Service continued until 1993. Keen to join the Wrens as a way out of her sheltered life, and, in her own words, get to a pub, was Hazel Baxter. Enlisting in May 1944, she left on marriage in 1948 a leading steward. 91 this year, she can still recite her official number.
A friend and I both applied, but it was awkward to get in because they didn't want many of us. They had their quota or something. So we had to have three references and a stiff medical, which she failed. I passed, and then I was called up. And I was only just of age. And I went to Mill Hill when the Dudewags were coming over for training. And when I got there, they only wanted stewards, cooks, and motorcycle riders. I had my sad days, especially if you had to pack up the belongings of someone for his wife. And you got to accept they were there today, could be gone tomorrow, elsewhere. Someone else comes and you do your best for them. If you're cheerful and always got a smile, there's always someone to welcome you. I had the honour of meeting Lord Mountbatten and looking after him. He came to the Vernon, and at the time I was working in the commander's block. I had to help out there because we had ex-service people that had been officer stewards in the Navy and come out on naval pension, and they come back during the war to help. And I looked after him that night. That was the night I was on duty, so it was good. Another time that was funny was when I was at Northern Parade School. I was only just 18 at the time. And someone decided that we all ought to learn to fire a rifle. Well, D-Day was all going on. We was in France and all the rest of it. And had to go on the rifle range. I didn't like that. And I was useless at it because we didn't wear trousers in them days. You only had skirts. And you had to lay down with the rifle, you see. And you had male instructors, POs and that, telling you how to fire and how to load and that. And you have to have your legs apart. But that was one thing I didn't like. But other than that, I had some good times. Wasn't much good at marching. It was all right till they shouted left, right. And I always went wrong then. And I think he did it deliberate. But you had to do your drill. And I think the discipline is good for you. You learn always to be on time. And even now, I worry if I'm out anywhere about getting there on time, and I must be there before time.
Hazel's helped now through the Wrens Benevolent Trust by an ex-Wren, Alison Doody. Joining up in 1963, she initially hated service life, persevering only because family and friends had little faith in her remaining in the Wrens. However, once she headed to Pembroke for her specialist training as a Wren writer, her attitude changed, and she continued to serve for a further 8 years, leaving on pregnancy.
From training, I went down to Drake, and then from Drake, I went to Norway, to Kolsås. From there, Leon Solent, Daedalus, and then I went to the Marines at De Prom. Each one had something totally different than the other. I just enjoyed all of them. Perhaps in the 60s, going out to Norway, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Before you go out to Norway, you've got a list of things that you have to buy. And one was a pair of black ankle-length boots, and they had to have a zip up them. I looked everywhere for these blessed boots, and I went out to Norway in December. Well, the snow was way past your ankle-length boots. Everybody has a good laugh. Oh, she's got her boots that nobody ever told anybody else. That was a really enjoyable time, a really interesting job. The embassy sometimes got tickets for the opera, ballet, and I actually saw Dame Margot Fontaine there. And also the nightlife there. We used to go out about 9 o'clock sometimes, you know, you just had to come back and get changed.
BFBS, Original Forces Programmes.
Women of the Waves.
With its apt motto, Nil Desperandum, Never Despair, the Wren's new entry training took place at HMS Dauntless near Reading until its decommission in 1981. During its 35-year lifetime, 300,000 new entry recruits passed through its gates. Living in wartime huts which once housed munition workers, I was one of the final trainees to go through Dauntless. Initially, I found the adjustment to service life quite challenging and at times very irritating, as we were retaught everything we thought we already knew. How to iron, make a bed, shine shoes, clean, march, scrub floors, oh so many floors. And of course the dreaded pay parade. Until the mid-1980s, tradition dictated we were paid in cash. For most it was a nightmare, because for what seemed like a lifetime, all eyes were on you. Fellow trainees, senior aides and officers. As you seamlessly, saluted with one hand, correctly shouted your service number, whilst at the same time presenting your pay book with the other hand. A nod from your regulating petty officer Wren would tell you if you were getting paid. A glare indicated that you'd failed. And back you went to the end of the line to do it all over again. It was also the place we were reminded by our RPO Wren that even if we didn't have faith in ourselves, they did. Competition to join the Wrens was fierce, and for every one of us there, many had tried and failed. With such a strong focus on routine, things didn't stay unfamiliar for long. And I have wonderful memories of both Dauntless and my specialist training at HMS Mercury. Commodore Annette Picton, now retired, also remembers her new entry training quite vividly.
I joined in 1973 as a cadet Wren writer, which involved at that stage going to HMS Dauntless, which is where everybody went, whether they were going to be an officer or were just joining as a rating. And it was a huge bonding experience to go there. I wouldn't say that I particularly enjoyed it when I first arrived, because a friend of my mother's had said, oh, it's a lovely country house. And so when I got there and was confronted with these wooden huts, bluettes and ferocious chief wrens, it was not quite what I'd envisaged, so it was a bit of a culture shock. And it didn't matter whether you had a first-class degree or you had not a single O-level to rub together other than the basics. And I think even years down the line, I meet an ex-Wren and you can immediately say, I was in the Wrens, and you've just got that common denominator. And it's absolutely wonderful, and I treasure it a lot.
With the move from Dauntless in 1981 and the female new entry recruits trained alongside their male peers, Wrens now came under the Naval Discipline Act. They were given longer terms of service, plus an increase in the roles they could apply for within the technical and support branches. Throughout my 9 years of service, it was widely understood and accepted, though rarely spoken, that Wren still held an admin support role. Towards the end of the 1980s, phrases such as small arms course or the word combatant were becoming more than a whisper. And eventually, women going to sea became an open debate. But it wasn't always taken seriously, as Wrens were still seen as shore-based. Plus, the mere thought of seagoing women caused some of the Navy spouses to actively demonstrate their displeasure outside naval bases around the UK.
There was a very emotional response to women going to sea, I think pretty much unfounded. There was this sort of notion, I think, that the entire ship's company was going to have a sort of collective affairs with all these women going to sea. And I can understand some disquiet, but I don't think it worked out like that at all. Well, it didn't work out like that, no more than it did in a shore establishment. But the changes that I've seen, and I think the right to bear arms, it sounds so insignificant now, but it was a huge, equal opportunities thing, and I remember it quite clearly. It was a great debate, should women, mothers, etc., be expected to be trained potentially to sort of kill other people. It seems extraordinary now that there was that sort of debate going on, but it really, really mattered. And of course, you're seeing it now when you're talking about women serving in the infantry and close combat and so on. And you have to remember also that when I was serving, if you got married and became pregnant, you had to leave. There was no question of remaining in.
Commodore Picton saw many changes throughout her career and has many memories of her time in the Wrens. Issues with RN recruitment and retention meant the Wrens were needed again to fill the breach. And in October 1990, 20 Wren officers in ratings joined HMS Brilliant as the first women to officially serve on an operational warship. Retaining their own identity with their traditional blue insignia badges and still having to leave on pregnancy.
By the time I left, I was the most senior female officer in the Navy, but we'd long since gone for gold, so I was not the director Wrens. I don't think initially it was in any way a sort of conflict, because you were terribly proud of being in the Wrens. It really didn't matter, but I think once you got the announcement that Wrens would have a seagoing liability, people's ambitions and perceptions really sort of changed. You know, they began to think, well, actually, I could do that and I can do that. And one was seeing it before the Wrens to Sea announcement, because of the manpower pressures, Wrens and Wren officers were increasingly being put into jobs, shore jobs, admittedly, which men had hitherto done. It created, you know, quite a sort of shock. I remember I was appointed to be what was then known as the captain's secretary, I think now would be executive assistant, at the School of Maritime Operations, and it was really quite difficult for the man I was taking over from. He had difficulty in saying, well, actually, a female's taking over from me. It was a culture thing which the Navy had some trouble with, but once they saw you could get on and do the job, you just got on with it, and they were rather proud of having men officers around, you know.
BFBS, Original Forces Programmes.
Women of the Waves.
Pete Murray-Jones, an ex-chief gunner who joined up in 1977, was a witness to the transition, having served on both HMS Herald and HMS Phoebe.
Throughout that time in the Navy, Wrens didn't go to sea, and then all of a sudden I was drafted to a ship and there was Wrens joining that ship. So everybody scurrying about, OK, we'll sort out this mess deck for the Wrens, this bathroom and heads for the Wrens. It almost seemed like a bit of a panic, a last-minute thing. However, it all seemed to work. And the big roughy-toughy boys, oh, it's never going to work, they're never going to work shifts and that. But they mucked in and in no time at all had that huge respect because they were holding their own. They were fantastic. The sceptics, oh, they'll never lift that. You know, they'll never be up at this time and how are they going to manage doing this and how are they going to manage doing that? They did, and they went out of their way. And the social side, whenever they were on board, they added a bit of fun as well. Obviously, no touch and rule and all that, but there was an awful lot of fun.
Hazel Norris joined up in 1980 and served her nine-year notice engagement, leaving as a Petty Officer Wren Radio Supervisor, or PRNRS. We served together in the mid-1980s, working in the Communications Centre, or ComSen, located in the Rock, and the Tower in the Dockyard. And we have many recollections of our time in Gibraltar, including working afternoon, forenoon and night shifts. The old naval hockey ground, which is now undergoing a radical change as the Gibraltar Midtown development takes shape. And the foreshore at the back of Rook, where once you sunbathed or had boat races. And divisions, everybody in tropical uniform. But the rather unique design of the Rook Parade Ground meant that when the military band played, there was always an echo. And it didn't help that the band would change to All the Nice Girls Love a Sailor at a critical point, potentially creating havoc for the Wrens platoon, as we did our march past, but not necessarily in step. With the impending changes on the horizon, I made the decision not to go to sea, as did Hazel.
I think I was getting close to completing 9 years, so I sort of made the mental decision that I didn't want to go to sea. But I had no qualms, no problems with the idea of Wrens going to sea. You get men and women working together in other work environments. If I was 19 again, yeah, I think I'd still go for it. Service life is fantastic. And I think everybody, given the opportunity, should experience it because you make such bonds with people, lifelong friendships. It instills discipline into you. I just think that every kid should do it, really.
With many of the groups affiliated to the Wrens, including the Wrens Association, the Wrens Benevolent Trust, the Wrens 100 Team, and the Dauntless Association, plus the Royal Navy's media team, everyone's committed to informing, coordinating arranging the events both locally, nationally and overseas. Still, the common thread continues, as it doesn't matter which group is organising or who you're affiliated to. Whether you're a veteran, still serving, your rank, your rate or your specialisation, you're invited to this year-long party in honour of those early trailblazers, as they're given pride of place in our minds as well as our hearts. The full diary of events this year includes the official opening on International Women's Day of the Pioneers to Professionals, being held at the Portsmouth Historic Dockyard. In April, the Dauntless Association is organising a REN 100 celebration in the Midlands. June sees Gibraltar host a whole weekend of events. July, the Old Royal Naval College in Greenwich pays tribute. During the Dauntless reunion weekend in November, there's the official commemorative stone laying and the service in the Portsmouth Cathedral. And later on that month, a REN's 100 guest list dinner on the Royal Yacht Britannia in Scotland. With emotion and subscriptions to the celebrations running high, there's every indication that this is going to be an incredible year of recognition. Media officer Lieutenant Commander Heather Lane has seen life from both sides, serving 8 years as a REN officer and the past 22 years as a full-time reservist.
REN's 100 is a celebration of this extraordinary, what I call the mighty sisterhood of women. And it not just connects us to our past, it takes us into the future. And I'm so keen that REN's 100 celebrates that women are going on to do even greater things. They are so professional today. I see the first commanders of warships. I'm seeing women rise to where they are in command of establishments. Our first training establishment, Captain Ellie Ablett, is a real role model for many women in the Navy today. And I'm excited for the future to see what women can do on military operations. We've been delivering for a long time now. We've seen some military crosses awarded, military medals to women who've been out on operations. I've served on operations. I was in Iraq and I've been to Bahrain and I've mobilised 4 times as a reservist. It's just been an eye-opener and I can only say that women are going to go on and do better things.
The last director REN's was Commandant Anne-Christine Spencer, CBE, who retired in 1993 as women joined the Royal Navy, serving on Her Majesty's ships at all ranks and rates, though some career paths would remain close to women for over 2 decades.
They proved it was possible for women to do the most extraordinary things. They were very professional women. I'm very proud to have worn blue, but I was excited to wear gold. I have travelled the world with the reserves, and I can't say enough about it. It's just been the most awesome career.
BFBS, original forces programs.
Women of the Waves.
Just how many women served in the Women's Royal Naval Service during both World Wars and beyond is a question that has been asked and has proved surprisingly difficult to answer. To try and identify the final figure, the REN's Benevolent Trust, WRNSBT, has conducted reviews in order to fully understand how many are eligible to contact the charity for assistance. Information published in the Trust's handbook estimates that some 143,000 women went on to serve in the REN's. There are some 45,000 living today who have either served or are still part of the Royal Navy. Commodore Mike Wallacker has seen the Royal Navy change firsthand. Working alongside shore-based REN and REN officers in a variety of roles, he also witnessed the transition of women going to sea on warships, taking to the air in helicopters, and now on submarines. As Commander British Forces Gibraltar, for him the changes are evident.
Having been here for 7 months, as I look at those here, the one thing that strikes me, bearing in mind we're talking about REN's 100, is now the fact that I have working for me a number of officers and ratings who are married with children, but who are over here in their own right doing the job. Post-maternity leave, you can come back and you've still got a long career but a massive amount to offer the Navy. We put a massive investment in our people, and in the case of anyone who leaves early, we don't really any dividend from that, whereas this way around we do. If you had said 25 years ago that would be the makeup of British Forces Gibraltar, I think they'd have just laughed at you, thought that never going to happen.
So thoughts turn to those women who 100 years ago, without whom today's Royal Navy would look quite different. From a very windy Gibraltar, Commodore Mike Wallacker again.
I mean, the fact that the Navy is fully behind Wren's 100, I think indicates that the Navy of today recognises its history and that it's not all about Nelson and 200 and something years and all about the war fighting. It's about the people, and the Wrens have been part of the Navy for 100 years, theoretically for 75 years, and then part of the Naval Service for the last sort of 25 of them. So therefore, there's a huge debt of thanks for all the work that was done, or plenty of anecdotal evidence still from Wrens who are still alive, from the films and from all of that, of the huge commitment and the sacrifice, of course, that the Wrens made in the Second World War, in that they did at that stage, of course, some significant jobs that then were restricted after the war.
Whilst the Women's Royal Naval Service no longer exists, the pioneering spirit of women in the Navy has not changed nor diminished over the past 100 years. It has in fact grown from its humble beginnings, as assumptions have been dispelled. The issue of being male or female is no longer relevant, as roles within the Royal Navy are simply open to the best person for the job. How proud those early trailblazers should be, knowing women can serve without boundaries, whether it's above or below the waves, or earning that coveted green beret. They continue to honour the spirit of those that went before them, accepting, excelling, and working alongside their shipmates, no matter what challenge the Royal Navy has to face. The attitudes faced by the first Wrens, and even those of us who joined up relatively recently, belong not only to a service which had been dominated by males for hundreds of years, it was also the attitude of society in general. A sign of the times. Thankfully, times have changed, as women seized the moment and took the opportunity to do something which took them away from their traditional roles and comfort zones. It's incredible to think that they would not have been aware of the changes they would trigger. For the women that join the Royal Navy today, it is quite a different story. And perhaps until this year, many were unaware of the route that was paved ahead of them. This perhaps is the biggest compliment that could be paid to the Wrens, as women no longer have to contend with equality issues and just get on with the job. Something all Wrens would support and certainly applaud, as their efforts were not in vain. Particularly as the modern day Navy has so much to offer.
I am Lieutenant Louise Moxworthy. I'm a naval nurse. I currently work at the Princess Royal Medical Centre in Gibraltar as the lead practice nurse. I joined the Royal Navy in 2002 to HMS Raleigh for basic training as a qualified naval nurse. My understanding of the Wrens 100 is a celebration of 100 years of the Wrens being part of the Royal Navy, or at least the formation of females serving within the Royal Navy. What I feel the Wrens have done for me is that they have really set the groundwork for change for females serving in the military. When I first joined the Royal Navy, females were very much already integrated within the service. We walked on to parade as part of a squad with male serving members of the Royal Navy. So for me, initially, it seemed normal. When I was pregnant, the sonographer who was scanning me mentioned my blue dress, the maternity dress that we all wear now, and she commented that things like that weren't common in her day, it didn't exist.
And not only has Louise been able to continue her career following the birth of her daughter, she's able to fulfil everything she envisaged for herself. The foundation no doubt being laid 100 years ago by those women of the waves.
The career prospects that I have today, to be serving back in 1917 or after that, when there were such restrictions of job prospects was available for the girls, and just the segregation that they had to go through, it's just not something I could imagine that we could do today. This was highlighted to me when I had the opportunity to go through my Admiralty Interview Board, or AIB, and then progress to BRNC, Britannia Royal Naval College, Dartmouth, to do my officer training, something that I always wanted to do, but restrictions of family life and my own husband serving at the time had never given me the opportunity to. But my husband completed his full career within the Royal Marines, and it opened up the opportunity for me to progress my career and achieve what I always wanted to achieve, something that would not have been available to me back when the Wrens first started. I could not be here today and have the career I have without the Wrens.
BFBS, original forces programmes on digital radio, FM and satellite TV in the UK.
Online and on air. Around the world.
This is Forces Radio.
The FBS.
Donald Trump is facing